dirty old river, must you keep rolling, flowing into the night? People so busy make me feel dizzy, taxi light shines so bright. But I don't need no friends. As long as I gaze on Waterloo sunset, I am in paradise. Every day I look at the world from my window. Chilly, chilly is the evening time. Waterloo sunset's fine. Terry meets Julie, Waterloo Station. Every Friday night. Me, I'm so lazy, don't wanna wander, I stay at home at night. But I don't need no friends. As long as I gaze on Waterloo sunset, I am in paradise. Swarming like flies around Waterloo Underground. Terry and Julie cross over the river where they feel safe and sound. And they don't need no friends. As long as they gaze on Waterloo sunset, they are in paradise. Waterloo sunset's fine.
Oh, there's some redemption for you. Let me put my headphones on. I have overcome Waterloo Sunset by the Kinks. Slightly. I think I might have botched a lyric or two there, but that's a far cry from the, you know, what happened on the last episode. So I feel good about that. I hadn't played that song until earlier today when I pulled out my guitar thinking I'm going to have to, you know, revisit that song on tonight's podcast because I was planning on recording this podcast. And it was there. It was right there in my mind. There were none of the sort of hang-ups I kept running into when I tried to play it on the last episode. And I'm happy about that because I love that song. And it's fun to sing and play. And yeah, just I was overthinking it last time. So I'm happy about that. It is 8:30 p.m. on Friday, March 22nd. And I forget what I was going to say. I've had a few bourbons already tonight. So I might not be at my most sort of acute intelligence or verbosity. Might not be so eloquent. Still got all the big words, don't worry. But this is episode 251. That's what I was thinking, like, what do I... There's something else I need to say, but what is it? I can't find it in my mind, but there it was. Episode 251. The J45 is sounding very nice. I'm happy with it after getting that work done a few weeks ago. So I was kind of neglecting that guitar for a while because it didn't sound great. But it's definitely the nicest guitar I own, so I'm happy that it's back, you know, in achieving its full potential sonically. I'm drinking some Woodford Reserve Double Oak, which is my favorite bourbon. It's more expensive than my normal bourbon, but I'm on vacation as of today, or as of yesterday evening, so I thought I will treat myself to a nice bottle of bourbon. So that's what I've got pumping through my system right now. And that's what's going to be responsible for any verbal snafus that I may encounter during this episode. So I thank you for your patience and your forgiveness in advance. It's been, again, like 10 days or so since my last episode, and it's been an eventful 10 days. I can say that honestly. Give me a minute here. Okay. So let's recap the last few, I was going to say few weeks, but it's only been about 10 days. I think it was 10 days. Maybe a little more. I think I mentioned on the last episode that I was set to travel to Osaka for, the Unpacking Japan podcast. And I did that. I think that was on the 14th, which is why I have 10 days in my mind as the 12th being the last time I recorded an episode. So I did that, and it was a really cool experience. I took the train down on the morning. That was like a Thursday. So I got on the Thunderbird, and I was kind of, I guess I should have anticipated this, but as it was unfolding, I was kind of like, what's going on here? What was happening was on the 16th of March, the new extension of the Hokuriku bullet train opened up. Until now, the train line has run from Tokyo to Kanazawa. And that's like a new line that opened up maybe 6 or 7 or 5 years ago. But in the meantime, they've been building the extension, which is going down to Fukui or maybe a little further. And I can't remember if the, like, I think the end goal is to have it run all the way to Osaka. But that's like a decade in the future that that'll actually happen. But finally, they were opening this newest, like, to Fukui extension. And until now, the only way to get to, or the fastest way via train to get to Osaka is this Thunderbird. It's like an express train. It takes about 2 hours, 2.5 hours. You know, it's a train that goes pretty fast and only stops at 3 or 4 or 5 places along the way. And it's a nice train. It's like, you know, nice big seats and big windows. And, you know, you can relax on this train. I took a nap. It was good. But what's happening... or I guess what has already happened as of last Saturday, I believe, the 16th, is the Thunderbird no longer comes all the way to Kanazawa. It now comes to wherever the bullet train ends now. That's as far as the Thunderbird goes. And there are a lot of train nerds in this country. And so seeing as I was on like the third to last day, or second to last day that this train was going to be in operation the whole way down. And we're going through like rural countryside rice paddies. There's just people out in the middle of the rice paddy with like their bazooka camera lenses taking pictures of the train as it went by. And every station we stopped at and everywhere in between along the way, there were just people with cameras camped out trying to capture, you know, the last days of this train that's been running for decades. So I was unwittingly a part of history, I guess you could say. But anyway, I got down to Osaka, and again, I'm not like super like familiar, I guess is the best word, with operating in big cities. I get kind of like my eyes get wide and like, whoa, there's a lot of people here, there's a lot of tall buildings, the pace is faster than I'm used to. I don't know where I'm going. I don't know what train to get on. It's not, I don't want to say it's overwhelming. It's like stimulating, and it's just such a different world than what I'm used to. So I got into Osaka Station, and then I was like, kind of, I had to take another train to the closest station to where the podcasting studio was. And I sort of realized as I was approaching the station, like, Osaka Station's like a big station. There's probably a million different train lines running out from it. And I sort of at the last minute messaged Tobias, the guy who I'd been communicating with and who interviewed me for the podcast, and like, which train line should I take, by the way, to get to, you know, where I need to go? But it all worked out. It was very, like, you know, I was a little worried. It's like when you're transiting an airport for the first time and you have sort of a next plane to catch. So time is a bit of the essence, but you're not sure exactly where to go. And you sort of get anxiety about making sure you don't get lost. I felt a very, very minor tinge of that feeling. But I found it and I arrived in time for my interview, and this building, I might have mentioned this before, but I was really curious about this operation because they like what I see and how I've met them on Twitter is through their video podcast, but they also release it like an audio version of it. And when you see the videos, it's like so slick. It's very like well filmed and well lit and like very professional looking. So I was kind of like, what's going on with these guys? I don't know them. I don't know what their deal is other than like the premise of their podcast. And I got there and it's like this really nice kind of tall building. I don't know. It's like maybe 5 or 6 floors, but like all glass on the outside and nice elevators and a nice lobby. They met me outside and I went in and they took me up. And we walked in. First, we walked past, because it's actually like the podcast is just a very minor portion of a much bigger business that's happening. And I walked past this room, this giant room with like probably 10 rows of like long desks with like 1,000 computer monitors and like 100 people sitting at those computer monitors. And I walked past that just like an open door through which I just caught a glimpse of this operation. And then we walked into this other room, not as big, but quite big and long, that was like their cafeteria, I guess. But it's all like really nice wood tables and, you know, nicely appointed furniture. They had like a foosball table and a ping pong table, a coffee machine, you know, the works. And I was like, what do you guys do? What is this place? And then he explained everything to me, like the origin of the business upon which the podcast is, well, the podcast isn't built upon it, but it's built within it, I guess you could say. And anyway, it's a business that he said it started as like a proxy buyer for people who wanted to purchase things that are only available in Japan. This company would buy those things and ship them to the customers. He said it was started up by a couple of Ukrainian guys. And so tons of foreigners, way more foreigners than Japanese people working there. But just, it was my first time in that kind of office environment where it's like so casual, like nobody, well, there were a few people like wearing suits, but there were also people in like sweatpants, you know, there's obviously no dress code at all. So you could just wear whatever you want. And it's like super casual and like it like what I imagine a startup company looks like, but this place has been around for a decade or so, I think he said, maybe not quite, but it's not a startup is my point. But anyway, so I went in and sat down, and he gave me the lowdown on the company. And so this was Tobias, who is, if I can remember correctly, he's German, but he grew up in France. And then he's the interview guy. And then there was another guy, Andri. I hope I'm saying his name right. Andri. But he was Ukrainian, and he was doing all the like the filming, setting up the cameras and the lighting. They had like big lights and everything. It was just such a like slick operation, very cool. But even though they set up the studio in the cafeteria, like when lunch is over, and like nice mics and everything. Like, you know, as a podcaster myself, I pay attention to these things, and they had a nice operation going. But anyway, I did the interview. It was like an hour. I got very passionate about gardening. And I don't know. It's going to come out, I think, at the end of April, he said. So I'll let you know when that comes out. But I don't know if I want to, like, maybe I'll listen to it. I don't know if I want to watch it. I don't like seeing myself, you know, on film, but maybe I should do justice by watching it. But most of the stuff we talked about is stuff I've either talked about on this podcast or, like on JJ Walsh's, podcast. So if you consume every bit of media that I put out, there won't be much new. But if you're not familiar with me and my story, then please tune in. Or even if you are and you're interested, check it out. But I'll let you know when that comes out. I did talk more about teaching English in Japan than I usually do on this podcast or anywhere else. But if you're interested in that. Anyway, so I did the interview, and I went there at 2:30, and my train home was at like 6:15. So we finished up around 3:30 or 4. And I was like, do you guys know any good beer shops? Because I'm in the big city, and I'm in a big stout phase at the moment, and there are limited selections here in Ishikawa. So we did some Googling after, and they pointed out a good beer shop that looked promising. So I walked, I ended up walking all the way back to the Osaka station. I didn't bother taking a subway on my way back, and found this shop that had like a bunch of stouts. I bought like 4 really powerful imperial stouts, and got back to the station and, you know, made my train, whatever. I guess what I want to say is Osaka is like a really, really nice city. It's got kind of a reputation, and maybe more so in my mind than in reality, as sort of like a kind of, I don't want to say run down, but like rough around the edges sort of city. But it's like so nice. Just walking from where the podcast studio was to, let me mention one more thing, because after the interview, they gave me a tour of the company, and it's actually 2 floors. And I just felt so awkward because they brought me into that giant room with all the people working, and they were like explaining it to me, which I appreciated. And it was really cool because I'd never experienced that kind of company setting before. But I just felt like such a dick, like all these people are working and I'm just standing there. Like they must have been like, who is this guy? Or I don't know if they have any hostility toward Tobias and Andre for doing this podcast, because they probably bring all the podcast guests into give them the same tour. And I just felt a little awkward, like I was in the way or something, or some kind of spectacle. But Osaka, it's just cool. And it's like the last time I was in Tokyo, it was really overwhelming. Like there's so many train lines and like so many people. And I mean, I used to live in Tokyo when I first came to Japan. And then I lived in Saitama after that for 2 years. And I would frequently go into Tokyo. So I was like, you know, familiar and comfortable with navigating around all of the huge stations and the various train lines. But Osaka just feels like it's got the same energy, but it's less sort of, overwhelming, I guess might be the word. It's just like a nice city and super clean and just, I've got a new appreciation for Osaka. The only other times I go there are just to get, renew my passport or my kids' passports. And that's always like drive there, because it's much cheaper to just drive than to pay for 4 people to take a train down and back. So it's like drive to the consulate, you know, pay for parking in some random parking lot, go in for my passport appointment, and then leave. Excuse me, I belched, goodness. But this was my first time sort of like walking the streets for any extended period of time. And, I was impressed. So, but one thing that I was also impressed with was, my phone battery was dying. And I remember like I was leaving, and I have one of those like external battery packs that you can like plug your phone into to charge it. And I was like, should I bring that? And I ended up not bringing it. And then my phone was like dead, as I was getting back into Osaka Station. And I was kicking myself because, God forbid, I have to sit on a train for 2 hours and not be able to stare at my phone the entire time. And so I went into like a 7-Eleven in the station, and they have, this service is just amazing. You can rent a battery pack. They have little sort of like pods that are full of these batteries, and you can rent it in one place and return it anywhere else you want. So I rented one of those and took it on the train with me. And then I arrived back in Komatsu, which is the closest station to that the Thunderbird stops on to my house. And I had downloaded an app that shows you like how much it's costing you, how long you've been using this rental battery, and then a map of places you can return it. And it was like 400 or 500 yen for the 2 hours that I used it. And I had like tapped out the battery. It was dead by the time I arrived. But I was looking at the map, and outside, like Komatsu is it's one of those cities that's going to benefit from having a bullet train stop on it, because there's not much there. The airport's close by, but there's nothing there of note. Like nobody would go there as a destination. But it's also cool. It's got like a lot of restaurants and this old school, like Showa, olden days, Japan kind of feel to it. And there was like on the map, on the app that showed me places where I could return it, there was like this random, name of the place. I couldn't tell what it was. It wasn't a convenience store. So I'm like wandering the streets looking for this place that's listed on the app. And I stopped in front of a restaurant. It was just a random restaurant. And I went in and like to the front desk, and I was like, I want to return this battery. And they're like, oh, okay, it's right over there. Just in the middle of this random restaurant, there's a pod of these cell phone batteries that you can borrow or return, which I thought was very cool and very random. But I was grateful for that, you know, service. The other interesting thing, to me at least, that has happened, I think I mentioned again on my last episode that I'd ordered a suit. And I wanted to wear it to the graduation ceremony at the school that I work at, but it wasn't ready yet. So all I had was a blue suit. It's not even a suit. It's like blue Uniqlo pants and a blue Uniqlo jacket purchased separately, not sold as a set. I mean, they match well enough, but this is a one of those situations where I feel the sort of sharp eye of Japanese society and conformity shining down on me or glaring down on me, because I go into the lobby. The graduation ceremony is like about 1,500 students and some of their parents sort of crammed in around the outskirts. But it's in a gymnasium, and the whole floor of the gymnasium is all the students. And then sort of around the sides and the back, you know, the parents cram in. And I had to go sit on a stage up at the front of the ceremony. And I go in, and this the same thing happened last year, which is why I wanted the black suit. I'm the only one wearing a not black suit, a dark blue suit. And it's nothing, like it's not a big deal, but like these are the things that I sort of think about when I'm in that situation, because I'm the only non-Japanese person among the like 50 people that are sitting on the stage. So naturally everybody's looking at me. And the fact that I'm the only non-Japanese person is probably why I can get away with wearing a not black suit. But anyway, that was sort of the main thing on my mind. But the other thing that I always sort of overthink is, because what happens is the band kicks off, and the people who sit on the stage file through, like up the middle. They part the seas of all the students and walk up to the stage. And at the stage, like front and center, there's a Japanese flag, and there's like the school bonsai tree that they parade out for every sort of ceremonial occasion. And you walk up the stairs, and all the Japanese people, they get up to the top of the stairs, and they bow to the Japanese flag. And for some reason, I'm not comfortable bowing to the Japanese flag, because I'm not Japanese. And I always wonder, every time I have to do this, like, again, everyone's watching me, so if I don't bow, they're going to see that I don't bow. And is that, and like the president of the school and the chancellor of the school and the vice president of the school and all the like most important people are already sitting on stage and probably watching me. And I always sort of do this calculation in my mind. Do I bow? Is it weird if I bow? Is it rude if I don't bow? And I never bow. I just sort of stand there for a half a second and then go to my seat. And the same thing, like when the ceremony's over, all the people on the stage file off the stage and they all bow at the flag as they walk away. And again, I go through my mind, do I bow? Do I not bow? Is it going to be offensive if I don't bow? Is it going to be weird if I do bow? And again, I just walk off the stage. So I hope I didn't offend anyone, but I can't bow to the Japanese flag. I wouldn't even like salute the American flag, you know? I don't think. I'm fairly patriotic. Like, I have a lot of pride, you know, for America, but I'm not like, that's like a line, I guess, in my mind that I can't cross a patriotic line. I'm not that patriotic, let alone for another country. But all the female students were wearing kimono. I never know if kimono is if I should pluralize it, kimono or kimonos. You don't say sushis. But anyway, they looked beautiful, and it was really cool. They all had like very intricate, like their hair was all done up in various styles, and they all had very intricate hair accoutrements. I don't know what to call them, but like they were metal, and they would kind of wrap around the back of their heads, like just a wire type thing, not like a helmet or anything like that. But it was nice. They looked beautiful, and all the male students in their black suits. What else is going on? The suit. I did get the suit that I ordered, which is good because I'll be able to wear it to the entrance ceremony for freshmen, which is on April 1st. But I went and picked up the suit over the weekend, and I went down to the store where I ordered it, and I'd gotten the suit. Like, none of the off-the-rack suits fit me properly. So I spent like an hour with the woman at this shop trying on different jackets, and like she was taking measurements and like, all right, we'll get this size jacket, but we'll have them tailor it to this size, you know, shoulders and waist. So I felt good that I was going to get a suit that was like really properly fitting. And so I went and picked it up. I didn't try it like on the jacket. They just gave it to me, and I was like, okay, I'll just take it home and try it on when I get home. I should have tried it on when I picked it up. I don't know why I didn't. I had my kids with me. We'd been running around the city for a couple hours already, and I was just like, okay, I'll take it home and try it on then. Got home, put on the suit, and it was like super tight around my, especially around like my, under my armpits and like the back there. And I felt like it looked good. It was nice and slim fitting, but it was like, if I extended my arms, it was like really tight feeling. And I showed my wife, and she said, like, I think it's fine. It looks good. But my expectation was that it was going to be something that I wouldn't feel that tightness when I like moved around. So I called the store and told them, like, I tried this suit on when I got home, and like the jacket is like super tight. I'd like to fix it. And they said, okay, sorry. You know, very, very polite. I wasn't like angry or anything. I was just, you know, telling them the situation. And they told me to come back with the suit the next day. And I went back, and the same woman who had, taken all my measurements and everything was there. And we tried on a couple other ones, and they said, like, you know, we can do it. It's probably not going to be ready by the April 1st when you need it, but if you can, like wear it then and then bring it back, we'll get it where you want it to be. But then she said, like, but that's how it's supposed to fit. And I said, okay, I don't know anything about suits. My sort of expectation was that I would get a suit that was like perfectly fitting and comfortable. But apparently, unless you're getting like a suit that's tailored from scratch, like formal suits aren't supposed to be that comfortable, I guess. And it's not like super uncomfortable. It's just not what I thought it would be. So anyway, I kept the suit. I was like, all right, I'll take your word for it. She said, like, it looks good. That's like how, you know, even if you make these modifications, it's not going to make a huge difference and it's not going to look better. So and she wasn't like handing me a line of BS or anything. She was like very sincere and apologetic and willing to do whatever I wanted to do. But she told me, like, it's not a casual suit. It's a formal suit, and that's how they fit. So now I know. I need to go get a completely bespoke, I feel weird even saying that word, suit if I want something to feel exactly the way I want. But I don't want to pay. I mean, this suit was not cheap, and can only imagine what a like completely made from scratch tailored suit would cost. Last weekend, I was like on a big health kick. We'll get to the weather update shortly, but this is sort of related to it. Last Saturday was like 70 degrees, just beautiful, warm day. Went out for a nice long run. I think I ran like 8 kilometers, which is much further than I've been running lately. It was great. And then I woke up on Sunday and I was like, I'm going to run again because it's the same temperature. It's the same temperature as yesterday. So even though the weather's not as nice, it's warm. So I went out, underdressed, and there's a big difference between like 16 degrees with the sun beating down and 16 degrees Celsius, by the way, with drizzle and wind. And I went out sort of dressed like I had run the previous day, like no layers. Excuse me again. And I got like very shortly into this run and it was like steady drizzle and I was already like wet, but I just said like, I'll do it. I'll go for it. And ran my 5 kilometers and got home and it was cold. It was not a warm 16 degrees at all. It was cool and wet and windy. And I got home and my wife and I wanted to go downtown. Actually, I was thinking of, picking up the suit that day. I'm getting my timeline screwed up here because I didn't have the suit yet. So I must have got the suit a day later. I don't know. Anyway, didn't have the suit yet. But we're planning to go get the suit that day and do some other shopping. So I got home from the run. It was like lunchtime. I ate lunch really quickly and then got in the shower. Took like a super hot shower. And I got out of the shower and I just felt like gross and tired and like nauseous. And I was like, oh man, what's this? So I nixed the trip downtown and I just went and like laid in bed or on my bed, and like closed my eyes. But I just felt like, I was like, oh man, I might throw up, which is just a horrible prospect to be in because I don't think anybody likes throwing up, but I especially despise the process. And, I was laying there and I didn't eat anything the rest of the day. And the thing was, I had my fantasy baseball draft at 9 p.m. that night. And I was like, oh man, this is perfect. I got the first pick in the draft and I'm going to be like vomiting and drafting at the same time. And I've got this golden opportunity. And of course, I'm like getting sick right as it's about to happen. But I made it through and I felt like pretty okay. I went to bed right after, but you know, it starts at 9 and I probably went to bed at 11 and woke up the next morning, felt like decent. I was like, okay, I've weathered the storm. And I went to work And again, I hadn't eaten anything since like noon the previous day, and I was sort of nauseous, sort of hungry. So I ate like a, in Japan they sell a lot of, it's instant noodles, but it's like rice noodles and kind of like nice broth. I wanted something like warm in my stomach. And so I ate one of these, and they're like super low calorie. They're like 90 calories or something. So, you know, I'm on a sort of, I'm on a health kick while still eating and drinking like a complete maniac. And so I had one of these cups of rice noodles, and then I was like, all right, I'm okay. And then I just felt like disgusting like 20 minutes later. Like legitimately, I'm going to throw up. So I just went home, and I was driving home, and I'm like, I'm going to puke when I get home. If I even make it that far, it's happening. I remember walking out to the parking lot and just being like, I just want to throw up right now. Like anything other than being hunched over the toilet, like puking in a parking lot, like with the fresh air, is quite attractive at the moment. But I held it together, got home, and just like crawled into bed and slept for a few hours, and then felt like good, decent. I ate like some toast or something, and then like some other small things throughout the evening, and I weathered it. I think I'm better. But that was a scare. I don't know what it was. If I just overexerted myself in that moment of running and hot shower and eating. But thank goodness. I don't even want to talk about it anymore, because that means I will throw up very shortly. I'll jinx myself. But yeah, some kind of weird stomach bug, if I could even call it that. Let's talk about sports talk. I mentioned the fantasy draft. I did that on that Sunday night, and I got a good lineup. I'm feeling real good about my lineup. And the thing that sucks is opening day is the 28th of March, I believe. Like next Friday or something in Japan. But the Los Angeles Dodgers and San Diego Padres just played two games in South Korea, which were like legitimate regular season games. And now they're going to go back to spring training, I guess. But those games were counting as stats for my fantasy league. So I got this like jolt, the endorphins of like seeing the stats and seeing my standings in the league for 2 days, and now it's just, they just ripped it out from under me. And the other thing that sucks is I only had one player on either of those teams, a pitcher, and he pitched the first game, and all the other guys in my league have tons of Padres and Dodgers on their teams, so their stats are like, you know, flying all over the place. They're leapfrogging me in the standings. And I mean, I know that there are 162 more games coming, and I will have my day. But I just started doing fantasy baseball last year, and it's completely addictive and engrossing. And I can't wait for the real regular season to start. The other big sports news here in Japan is that Shohei Ohtani fired his translator Ipei for apparently stealing $4.5 million from him to pay off gambling debts. And this is such an interesting story because Shohei Ohtani is like the golden boy, legitimately. Like he's just an amazing athlete. And, like what he does on the baseball diamond is amazing. And he's just has like a pristine image of never doing anything wrong. And the other element of it is that his translator, Ipei, is also like, because of his connection to Ohtani, is like a cult figure. And, you know, just to see the downfall is sort of shocking. And also, it's like Ipei gave this interview and then instantly changed his story to seemingly protect Ohtani, but I think the cat's out of the bag. So it's really interesting to see how this will play out. But anyway, most of my listeners probably don't care about that, baseball or sports in general. Sorry, Jules, if you're listening. As I mentioned, I'm on vacation. And where are we at for time, by the way? I feel like I've been going on for a while here. That's not the right thing to press. Oh, yeah, we're going up on 40 minutes. Yeah, I've got like almost a week off here, so we've decided to take a little family trip. On Monday, we're driving over to Gifu Prefecture, to the middle of nowhere, where we will stay in an onsen hotel for 2 nights of bathing and eating and relaxing. So I'm looking forward to that. Pay attention to my Twitter feed. I will post lots of beautiful pictures of the Gifu countryside. But I feel like this is sort of the my last moment of peace before I take on my new position from April, and I have a lot more responsibility, and I'm just sort of enjoying not having that as much as I'm excited about of doing those things. I feel like this is like my last moment to sort of enjoy a relatively simple life as far as work is related. So I'm just sort of in an odd space mentally and professionally at the moment. But I'm happy and I'm excited. All right, real quick, let's do a weather update and a garden update. Weather update, as I mentioned, last weekend it was like 70 degrees. This morning in the last few days it's been snowing, but after some flurries this morning, it cleared out to just an absolutely beautiful day, and I actually did some work in my garden. So garden update. I went out, I've got this like perimeter of strawberry trees, which is a nice evergreen fruit-bearing tree that belatedly I planted around the perimeter to get some privacy. And the problem is, being evergreen, they collect a lot of the snow, the heavy, wet snow that falls here in Ishikawa. And I'd meant to do this in the fall. Like, I bought these posts to bang into the ground and like, put up some kind of support to prevent the strawberry trees from totally keeling over when they collect all the snow. And, I mean, I've had them for a few years now, so they're, because of the snow, they're all sort of perpetually just bent out over the sidewalk, which is probably, my neighbors probably aren't psyched about that because they basically can't use the sidewalk when they're going past my house. Sorry, neighbors. So anyway, I finally got out and I banged all those posts into the ground. I need to figure out what to put, you know, horizontally across the posts that will sort of prop up the trees. It's not, some of them are actually like flopping over. Others are like better established, and which is almost bad because they're like rooted very firmly. And like, if I try to push them back to stand them up more, there's too much resistance. So I'm going to have to heavily prune them back and, you know, to get them to fit in to my property lines. But I did that, and then I have this mulberry tree, which was for a while just like super prolific, just tons of mulberries. My wife goes out, and she's just got like in the spring, like her fingertips are just stained purple because she goes out and harvests them, and they like just gush juice and stain your fingertips. But the last few years, it comes into leaf perfect, looks great, looks healthy. But then the fruit comes out and it like instantly sort of turns white and then withers up and dies before you can even have a chance to harvest it. And I noticed like on the trunk of the tree, there was some like evidence of creatures boring into the trunk and the branches. So I assumed that that's what's causing, you know, the fruit to not be viable. And so today I was like, that's it. I'm going to cut it down. My plan was to cut it down to like the base and hopefully regrow it from there. And I got to the point where I was, and this thing's probably like 12 or 15 feet tall and quite like the diameter is, you know, 6, 7, 8 inches. It's quite thick. It's a 5 or 6 year old tree at this point. So it's well established. And I got like halfway down the trunk and lo and behold, just two giant black holes in the trunk. Like something has obviously been in there. So I just sort of kept cutting segments down to the point where those holes no longer existed. And already like from the base of the trunk, there's tons of like shoots coming out. So I just cut it down, you know, pretty far down. And I'm hoping that the healthy wood that remains will grow into another healthy tree. And that's the most exciting thing that happened in my garden today. The acacia trees are full bloom, the nice, beautiful yellow flowers that always signal the beginning of spring here in our area. So very excited. Yeah, I'm excited. I need to, you know, there's a lot of work to do. And as I've mentioned before, I've sort of lost my vigor the last season or two. But I'm trying to sort of rekindle that now. So, all right. I think that'll do it for this episode. It's long enough, I believe. So thank you for listening. I will, I'll try to get another episode out before I go back to work and things get more intense. But if not, I'll be back soon. Anyway, so thanks for listening. Hope everybody's doing well. And oh, listen to Ishikawa Summit to See, my former podcast. Joe released a solo episode last week, and I listened to it, and it was good. Talks about me a lot, so, you know, can't go wrong there. And give him some support, and listen to him on the J-Pops podcast as well. So thanks, everyone. Talk to you next time. Bye-bye.